This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. A lot going on today. We're going to find out if this, there's going to be any talks on this lockout, which is shut down, which is still going on. We're closing in on a lot of these special elections, these off-year elections that are going to matter a lot. And there's going to be debate day. Debate day for the mayor's race in New York City. It's the last chance for Cuomo and Sliwa to make a difference against Mamdani, who seems to be about 15, maybe at least 10 points up. Carly Shimkus will join us at one point this hour. So let's first get to the big three.
Number three.
Russia has not changed its position compared to the understandings reached during the extensive negotiations between Putin and Trump in Alaska.
Okay, fine. Nothing was agreed on then, and you have your maximalist approach. So, Sergey Lavrov, you're not going to get your meeting. Trump, Putin, too, on hold as Rubio and Lavrov talk, and it shows they will have it will be a total waste of time for our president. I say give them the tomahawks to Ukraine, blast the Russians with the Senate sanctions, and let Ukraine win.
Number two.
I'd love to meet with them. I just want them to open up the country first. I would like to meet with both of them, but I set one little caveat. I will only meet if they let the country open. They have to let the country open.
And they reached out yesterday. Shut down now at 4 weeks and counting as Democratic leaders reach out directly to Trump to make a deal. Trump has made it clear, open up the government and we can talk.
Number one.
Hey, New Jersey, this is Barack Obama, and I want to talk to you about my friend Mikey Sherrill. Mikey is a mom who will drive down costs for New Jersey families.
No, she won't. And she also flies a helicopter. That's all we know. Barack Obama back in the fray. Now it's getting interesting. Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial races bring out the big guns, and they watch their commanding leads shrink before their eyes in their blue states. We look at the polls, the game plans, and preview the New York City mayoral debate. So first, let's talk about what's happening in Virginia. Why would you bring out Mayor Pete? Why would you have Barack Obama go to New Jersey? Why would you have Governor Whitmer show up in Virginia? Because you are extremely nervous if you're a Democrat that you're not going to win as you promised, that your double-digit lead has disappeared. And you've earned this type of distrust and dismay because Abigail Spanberger is supposed to be this moderate, but still will not come out and say she's against trans men and girls' bathrooms. She will not come out and for ICE and coming out against illegal immigration. Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears has been strong, and Governor Youngkin is popular, and she was his lieutenant governor. So, get this. If you don't think the Democrats are nervous, they are now writing a $500,000 check to Pennsylvania and New Jersey races to salt away this victory. And Barack Obama has been scrambled to help out, doing robocalls and personal appearances. Personally, his appearances only help Barack Obama. I know he's got 96% approval among Democrats, but it doesn't help candidates, or else we would have had a President Biden II, a Hillary Clinton, and a Kamala Harris. Think about it. He didn't have the guts, President Obama, to put his party first and tell Joe Biden, you're not the same guy. You're not the same guy that I picked 15 years ago, 16 years ago to run for president, or else I wouldn't have picked you. But instead, it was Nancy Pelosi that had to force him out. I don't want to get into the Democratic inner workings, but people should just know. Barack Obama is about Barack Obama. Here's Abigail Spanberger, cut 10.
It is only in Virginia and New Jersey that we have statewide elections where we can prove to the rest of the country when given, when we have the opportunity to make a change at home in our state, we will take it.
Right. That was a 12-point lead in July that she had. Now it's down to 9. And now it's down to, it went from to 9 in September. And here we are at the end of October, it is down to 7. And she's earned that distrust. You saw what a hideous debate that she had. She just wanted it to end before it started, and it showed. But this is the type of help she's getting in Virginia. And we got great stations in Virginia. You tell me, 1-866-408-7669. Do you wait to decide if who you're going to vote for after Bill Nye makes a selection? Bill Nye, the science guy, out there against anything Trump and anything Republican. Cut 14.
Speaking of Abigail's opponent, the opponent supports the president, the guy who's working very hard to divide us and divide the country. He's making a mess out of everything he touches. Don't know if you watched the debate. It's a lot of fun. Abigail stayed focused and delivered her measured messages. Her opponent, on the other hand, showed us her true self. She was, she was ranting. She was talking nonstop, especially.
I can't even listen anymore. That's Bill Nye. He was talking about Abigail Spanberger when asked, are you going to run from Jay Jones, who text messages revealed and he's admitted were accurate, wanted to put a bullet through the head of a Republican opponent and through the rest and kill their family. And that is why Jones went from a 12-point lead in the race in July and is now trailing by 3, according to the latest poll in the Virginia Commonwealth University Doug Wilder school poll. So now it's trailing. All Spanberger had to say is, I pull back my endorsement, let the voters make a decision. But instead, she stared straight ahead. Let's go over to New Jersey. Jack Cittarelli closing the gap big time. How do I know? All the polls show it. I mean, this was a race in double figures, and he would come on our show and say, listen, whatever you do, do not believe those polls. Remember, the polls had me losing by double digits. I lost by 3 last time. This guy's an assemblyman. He's known as a moderate in a purple state that is actually a blue state. Many people hope to be purple. But if you're a moderate Republican, it is your only chance. Keep in mind, New Jersey does elect Republican governors. 5 of the last 10 governors have been Republican. They got Kelsey Grammer. Cittarelli is doing ads for Jack Cittarelli. So that's good for him. But Kamala Harris, absent from Mikey Sherrill's campaign when she's calling in all the big guns. Why? Because she's radioactive, even though she thinks she's the future of the party. Here is a little from Mikey Sherrill, desperate to get to keep her lead. Cut 17.
Make no mistake, at every single turn, we are seeing Jack Cittarelli just go along with whatever the president says. And it's costing us all a lot of money.
No, what's cost a lot of money is the fact you're going to freeze rents, that you're going to freeze the utility costs. That's impossible. If you freeze those costs, somebody pays the price. Utility companies have to give it out somewhere. You're just going to squeeze and it's going to go somewhere else. It was the green policies in New Jersey, Massachusetts, and New York that forced up utility rates. It is the number one issue or number two issue amongst everybody in New Jersey. And that's why this Jack Cittarelli has been so formidable. Cut 16.
Something my opponent has endorsed. We got to reopen the plants that he shut down. I'll repurpose them and use natural gas to generate more electricity. We'll expand our nuclear footprint down in South Jersey. We'll build 3 or 4 new natural gas fire electricity generation plants. But first of all, on day one by executive order, I pull out a Reggie. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is a carbon tax policy that has failed New Jersey. Air is no cleaner. Electricity is only more expensive. And ratepayer dollars go in other states. We can save $300 to $500 million a year on day one for ratepayers, homeowners, tenants, and businesses by pulling out of Reggie.
And gas is dropping too, so it's going to be even cheaper. You pull out of that agreement, you don't get your carbon tax and all that Al Gore stuff is done. That's another great thing the president has done in 9 months. He's sobered people up on DEI and this green fever. Do renewables, be responsible, but don't put your economy on its head for technology that's not capable of fueling your state, your county, or your country. Meanwhile, let's go to the mayor's race. I'm Domi Cuomo in Sliwa. Many people are calling for Sliwa to back out. The New York City Republican Club says he's not. He should stay in. He represents conservatives. Now, Cuomo did this interesting thing. He's coming out and telling people, I will give Curtis a good job if he would just drop out. Here's Curtis, cut one.
So let's be very clear. I am not dropping out under no circumstance. And I will be casting my vote on the first day of early voting Saturday. So that should reaffirm to everybody. I'm in it to win it.
Yeah, but you're not going to win. His ideas are conservative. Donald Trump wouldn't win mayor of New York City. I don't know any Republicans in the Senate that would win the Republican, that would win the Republic as a Republican would win in New York City. Those days with Giuliani and Bloomberg originally ran as a Republican, they're just done. So if you are a conservative, and Curtis is, it's still not going to work for the big picture. Now, the question is, if he dropped out, could Cuomo get his votes? Right now, Cuomo's only got 37% of Republican votes. It's the only way he can win. That's why he's hopping on our network and doing interviews with the New York Post. And he went on with on Special Report last night, which, by the way, I was on in the panel. Here's Cuomo with Brett Baer, cut seven.
Why haven't Democrats who may be concerned about democratic socialism or worse of what could happen, why haven't they endorsed you?
Why haven't the Republicans endorsed Sliwa? In these elections that are contested, if a politician doesn't have to make a decision, Brett, they don't want to make a decision, right? And there is a tension in the Democratic Party. That far left is very powerful and threatening everyone. Moderate Democrats, mainstream Democrats, are in a difficult position because they're threatened by the far left. What politicians do best is don't make a decision. And I think that's what you're seeing.
And you see Hakeem Jeffries still thinking, even though early voting starts in 2 days, he's got to meet with Mamdani again to still talk to him. Gutless. Senator Schumer, I know him. I know him. What kind of answer is that? I know him. Of course you know him. He's in New York, an assemblyman in New York. You're a senator from New York. Of course you know him. You going to endorse him? Or do what Gillibrand says, no way. Do what Tom Suozzi says, no way. Do what Laura Gillen says, no way. All Democrats in New York. But this has no guts. That's what I hate about this. I mean, you say, well, I'm going to play do a calculation, Governor Hochul. I don't agree with most of the things he's saying, but I want to endorse him because he's got great social media and he's popular with certain people that she's not popular with, like young people. So when we come back, I'm going to give you the reason why Donald Trump has decided not to meet with Vladimir Putin, and it's a good one. And give you the latest on Gaza. The vice president is still there or just left. I think it's so great that they're staying engaged right on top of these things just a week after the ceasefire has been done. You are listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It gives me great pleasure to tell you that Simply Safe is now available at 50% off because you're listening to this podcast. So go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Now, why is Simply Safe so perfect? Number one, it's easily put in. Number two, it's unbelievably effective. Number three, they're using AI now to stop the break-in, not just catch the people that are doing it, but to stop them before they infiltrate your life and destroy your personal property. I personally trust these people. This is a game changer. The agents take action while the intruder is still on the outside. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera, and you know they're going to head for the hills because they're going to head right to prison if they don't, and hopefully they still will. There are no long-term contracts. There are no hidden fees. Get this, the U.S. News and World Report, they named them, Simply Safe, the best home security system. There's a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what price can you put on safety? Well, Simply Safe is easy to install. They're always improving the product, and it's affordable. Why can't you be safe? The answer is, of course you can. Go get Simply Safe. Save your 50% by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. Get it.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't want to have a wasted meeting. I don't want to have a waste of time, so I'll see what happens. But we did all of these great deals, great peace deals. They're all peace deals, agreements, solid agreements, every one of them. But so we'll see what happens. It's we haven't made a determination.
So, of course, I give the president great credit. He had a promising conversation with Vladimir Putin, but he seized the pattern. So he said to his Secretary of State, talk to your counterpart, Foreign Secretary, Foreign Minister Lavrov, who's been there forever. And when he was done, he said, they're not ready to talk. They're still in their, reportedly, they're still in their maximalist phase. That means Ukraine has to be neutral. Ukraine can't have a military. Ukraine has to give up the whole Donbass, including Donetsk, which they have not won in 14 years, meaning you've Russia. They're losing 7,000 soldiers a week and they're dictating terms. Yeah, they're bigger, but they're not good fighters. They're running out of people. They're grabbing people from Africa, where they're trying to get their colony, they're putting on their 18th century colony hat and trying to take over the areas with their militias, with their paramilitary groups. So now, Sergei Lavrov thought he had another high-profile meeting in Hungary. But since it's not going to yield anything, the president put it on hold. Here's Lavrov, cut 25.
Russia has not changed its position compared to the understandings reached during the extensive negotiations between Putin and Trump in Alaska.
Yeah, that's what he wants. With the president understood he had to digest a Russian history lesson, and thankfully they said in the middle of it, he started cursing and said, knock it off to Putin. That came out of Alaska. Also with Zelensky, he evidently was telling Zelensky, you got to compromise, let's keep it on the current battle lines. The Russians have rejected that. These battle lines aren't good enough for them. They are aiming for the infrastructure and the energy, and they want to make it a very cold winter for the Ukrainians. And guess what? The Ukrainians are doing the same to them because they're going for their energy. This is what I say to do, Mr. President. They want Tomahawks. They're now land-based. Deliver them and say, guys, don't use them unless they give you the go sign. Number two, I would tell the Senate, pass the sanctions bill. It's got 85 signatures. Democrats are for it. Massive secondary sanctions. Now, it's going to be awkward because anyone buying offshore would be sanctioned. Oil and gas would be getting sanctioned by us. And China buys their oil and gas. We know that Turkey buys oil and gas. We just had them cooperate on Middle East peace. So it is awkward, but I would just do it. And you just tell them the status quo is not going to stand. In Gaza, I give the president great credit. J.D. Vance went back over there just a few days after this ceasefire has been put in place. The flare-up over the weekend, 14 Palestinians, Hamas fighters dead, two IDF soldiers dead during a ceasefire, but immediately they both signed up for the ceasefire. In terms of Hamas, they're still trying to kill anybody organizing against them. Jared Kushner knows it. Cut 29.
No reconstruction aid, no reconstruction funds will be going into areas that Hamas still controls. And as far as the demilitarization goes, once the ISF is up, there needs to be a security force that they can feel safe from that in order for it to be the transition to be complete. So that needs to happen. There are considerations being happening now in the area that the IDF controls, as long as that can be secured to start the construction as a new Gaza in order to give the Palestinians living in Gaza a place to go, a place to get jobs, a place to live. So that's one of the many things being considered.
Yeah, so Jared Kushner is still advanced. Steve Witkoff still there. J.D. Vance has arrived. And they want to make sure that everybody adheres to it. Look, we are obviously in Israel's camp. But we've got to assume that there are people in the Palestinian territories that do want a life. And that's why the technocrats are going to be key. People that just want to stand up the area. What I was hoping is you could look at that area like it got hit by a hurricane, a tsunami, or an earthquake. All three. But you can't fix it right away if they're shooting at you. So you can't get the heavy equipment in. Tractor drivers, you know, can't worry about getting shot in the back of the head. So we're already seeing the violence is still taking place. Can't rebuild unless it's there. The money will be there. We got to get an international force there of about 30,000. It's up to our 500 that are in Israel to organize them, to get them in, to get them out, to get them accommodations. Here's J.D. Vance yesterday, cut 28.
This is difficult. This is not going to happen overnight. Some of these hostages are buried under thousands of pounds of rubble. Some of the hostages, nobody even knows where they are. That doesn't mean we shouldn't work to get them, and that doesn't mean we don't have confidence that we will. It's just a reason to counsel in favor of a little bit of patience. This is going to take a little bit of time.
So I think we're looking at 15 more hostages that we got to get out of there. So let's see if they get done. And that's a good attitude to have. We also know that The Israeli ambassador told me that there's 10 bodies. We know exactly where they are. Go get them. He told that to Hamas. So far, they've returned three since last Thursday, which is 6 days ago. They haven't. So you have to wonder if they fear phase two. Why should they fear phase two? because phase two begins the international fighting force in there, some of which, if you kill them, they'll wipe you out like Egyptians and Qataris. And number two is phase two is when you're supposed to disarm if you're Hamas. I don't think they're going to do that. They might have to be forced. Chloe Shimkus comes in next. She's got opinions on that and so much more. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I got to see Joe Biden almost every day. And this is a question that I take very seriously. No one has ever said he hasn't aged. No one ever said that. He would make jokes about it. He would acknowledge it. And he would say, yes, I know I don't speak this as well as I used to. I don't walk as well as I used to. No one is saying that he didn't age. I'm talking about, did he have the question that I was getting, the mental acuity? Was he able to govern? And the man that I saw nearly every day was someone who was engaging, understood policy, and was always putting the American people first.
That is KJP selling her book, going on with, that was Stephen Colbert's show, right? Yeah, so Stephen Colbert gave her a hard time, though. Carly Shimkus is now in studio. Carly, great to see you. Great
Good
job
you,
on Fox
yeah.
and Friends.
Oh, thank you. Great
but now is Stephen Colbert really pushed her on this?
He did. Yeah. And I have to say, Stephen Colbert was right. And you heard Karine Jean-Pierre make the argument, no one is saying this, no one is saying that. But she is. I mean, her whole point is that from her perspective, Joe Biden was a strong leader. That was one of the things that she has to say, and that his mental acuity was up to par in being the president. And nobody, besides maybe the one person who applauded and that applause didn't catch on, believes her. And Colbert was saying, you can't be serious about this, and really did push back on it in a way where he still maintained some sort of friendly nature to her. But yeah, I mean, Stephen Colbert in this instance, totally right. I don't even know if Karine Jean-Pierre believes what she's saying. I think she's just maybe trying to save face.
With who? Only the famed Biden family?
I guess herself for being a part of the administration and you know, having the ability to say, I wasn't lying at the time and I'm going to write a book about it. And I do think that Joe Biden was probably very nice to her and a nice man, and she feels some loyalty to him.
Yeah, but you had to know the same thing we're finding out in the James Comer auto pen investigation, that nobody was seeing him. He was only working 4 hours a day. And that Stephen Colbert all of a sudden feels emboldened to ask tough questions. Really? Now? If he was going to finish out the string, didn't have a bad debate, or if there were zero debates, because he could say Donald Trump is a felon, I don't debate felons. He would have been going to bat for him, but yet seeing what we saw, the shuffling, the detachment, no press conferences, inability to answer questions, bad policies.
All you need to know is that he was only able to work outside of his nap times from, what was it, 8 to 4 p.m. as the president. And then you look at what Trump is doing. It's like a fire hose of everything under the sun, from peace deals to renovations to helping Jack Chitterelli out in New Jersey. Get it, you know, having the teams, the baseball teams over at the White House this week.
Putting on a new ballroom. Yeah. So here's more from KJP on Colbert. Cut 39.
I don't think it was necessarily a betrayal of Joe Biden, as other people saying, we don't think we were shown the Joe Biden
Stephen.
That you saw.
I saw every day
a really ugly assault on someone who had 50 plus years of experience and who, again, objectively had done a good job as president of the United States. And it was heartbreaking to see that type of behavior.
Yeah, so her whole point is that she thinks that the media covered Joe Biden unfairly at the time, which is like, are you joking? Are you kidding me? And it's just, you know, it's her. I don't know how much she really resonates right now. I don't think it's a whole lot, but I think that this is more a book that she's doing for her own maybe personal archives, right, to say I stood by what I said.
Kamala Harris wrote a book to make herself feel better, but she didn't alienate the Democratic Party. She alienated a lot of people that she's going to be going against, like Newsom and Whitmer.
Yeah.
And that's who's going to be competing against. But this woman blew up her party, who knew she was bad. They tried to move her out to Angeles, remember? And then she goes on and she's still selling the Biden story. But now she's selling to a bunch of people who are mad at Joe Biden for not stepping aside. They should be mad at themselves for not asking these tough questions. Here she is on The View, cut 40.
President Biden was one of the most decent people that I know. And he literally woke up every morning wanting to make this country better. We did everything that we could to defend her. And there were moments at the podium where I went viral for defending her. I knew how important it is for me to do that. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, the president also wanted me to make sure that we were defending her.
So I'm sure talking about Kamala Harris there, right?
And you know Kamala Harris's big complaint? The White House never defended
her. Yeah, there was a lot of tension between Kamala Harris as the vice president's office and the president's office. You remember that?
Yeah.
My goodness. So, I don't know. I mean, do people really care? I guess it's a little bit – the intrigue to me in hearing Karine Jean-Pierre now is just, you got to be kidding me. It's like one of – you know, you listen to these Stephen Colbert clips and he's saying, come on, like, you've got to be kidding me. And
but
you're
giving – I feel like, Carl, you're giving Stephen Colbert a pass. This guy was covering – he literally gave – he said he raised $23 million for – Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. If anyone doubted that, you know, you lean left, you actually raise money.
I know, but that's just par for the course.
He said,
with everybody.
But you raise money for the guy for $23 million and you didn't know that he was shuffling. He was unable to speak, unable to ad lib. You didn't notice he wasn't holding press conferences, wasn't interacting with people, blatantly lied. No general told me but there would be danger to evacuating Afghanistan.
Yeah.
The Inflation Reduction Act was a big dupe. He had nothing to do with it. He said that it doesn't reduce inflation. He put one over on us. I don't know. I can't go along with the outrage because it's like a guy that's been exposed and now you come out and go, yeah, this is bad. Very similar to Jake Tapper. Like
Without
Jake
question.
Tapper's book is full of interesting things. But you just say, how could you suddenly have a revelation in 4 weeks to put together a book that's out in 3 months that says everything that we've been saying?
Yeah, no, I guess my comments are less on Stephen Colbert and more just shock at what Karine Jean-Pierre is saying. And all that you said should be said back to her when she says that the media and the press didn't cover Joe Biden fairly.
Right. So listen, the last thing I want to play is she went after Caroline Levitt, which is a joke. She said Caroline Levitt shouldn't go online engaging reporters trying to so-called straighten them out. Really? Okay, cut 41.
They don't seem to understand, this is the Trump White House, that they don't work for just one man.
Yeah.
They work for the American people.
Yeah.
It is about coming together, about a common good.
Yeah.
The White House press secretary is not about doing online trolling.
Right.
It is not. It is an honor and a privilege to have that job.
So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, it's just you look at how Karine Jean-Pierre handled herself at the podium, and even media, the press, were getting very frustrated because she never answered any questions. She would just continue to say, as I've said before, we've been very clear. You remember her going through the binder, and we all lived through it. I think that Caroline Levitt does a very good job. She's very read in. She also has President Trump gives her the ability to speak, so she feels comfortable asking questions without breaking any news that she shouldn't. So, I mean, obviously, it's a different administration. It's a Democrat versus Republican, so there's always going to be something there. But I do think that usually press secretaries of other parties always – it's sort of like it's a very small group of people who've gone through it before.
Mm-hmm.
So they usually sort of stick up for each other. And, you know, you have Dana Perino's – is one of the very few who've done the job and understands where press secretaries from other administrations are coming from. So maybe because it's so fresh that Joe Biden just exited office, but to hear one press secretary criticize another is sort of a rare thing.
Yeah, Jen Psaki criticizing the second lady. That's kind of a rare thing. That's basically because she's a minority that she's not respected by her husband, which is just insane. So I think this KJB thing, I thought the Jake Tapper book showed great audacity and he got blowback and he should have. But he did a bunch of interviews and defended himself. KJP's on friendly outlets and she's getting pushback. I think she's probably shocked because she's that much in a bubble to not realize that we saw through what she was saying.
Yeah.
And remember, Admiral Kirby was so much better than her and she would not step aside. And as a minority lesbian, she was unmovable. Remember?
Well, yeah, it was this really weird dynamic where Karine Jean-Pierre would have to be at the podium and he would be standing beside her. And then she would sort of be the quarterback of when he would speak. And
crazy.
She wanted to control the podium and control her job. But you may not have liked what Kirby was saying, but he had command of the subject and, you know, did have a good voice for the Biden administration, especially on foreign policy topics, which was their absolute, if you could pick one, weakest point.
Afghanistan had to be explained. Ukraine invasion had to be explained. Oh, and Gaza had to be explained. And it can't be by KJP, who can't explain that. I was giving her an out, as a little bit of an out, because it's been so clear from James Comer's investigation that he was meeting with no one, not sharing any policy, and probably not doing any policy. So if you're the press secretary, you walk out there and you hear these questions and you just make it up.
Yeah. But do you?
But now I don't, because she's saying she met with him all the time.
I know, which is clearly now, not true. Yeah. And you have to wonder, so we're reflecting on the Biden administration. We're looking backwards right now. And did Democrats learn anything from that experience and the way that they're handling politics today? And I think the answer is no. I mean, you have all these races in Virginia and especially in New Jersey where Mikey Sherrill is, like we said, running against Donald Trump. And clearly that hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing it again for these governor's races to make Donald Trump the focus of their race as opposed to the ideas and the items on the, you know, when it comes to prices and security. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about that. They're running against Trump again.
I hear you. Carly, a few more minutes with you, and then you get a chance to do what you always do, go to the bars. Oftentimes alone, there's no one in there, and you'll just try to recalibrate.
I know. I do see you passing by the window and going, there she is again.
Yeah, no, I'm still doing radio.
Oh.
You must be seeing somebody else.
Oh, well, that's because I'm drunk.
Yes. So. Yeah, yeah. Or it's very buzzed.
He's kidding.
Back in a moment.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, New Jersey. This is Barack Obama, and I want to talk to you about my friend Mikey Sherrill. Mikey is a mom. Will drive down costs for New Jersey families.
Mom. Mikey's a mom. Isn't that great? I want to vote for her. She also can fly a helicopter. But since her double-digit lead is now down to 3 of 4, it's time to bring in the most popular Democrat in the country with 94% approval rating among Democrats. Carly Shimkus is still here, co-host of Oxen Friends First. author of Cooking with Friends.
Yes.
It's still out.
It's still available.
Am I on the
in
cover?
Stores.
Like, people think I co-wrote that book.
You are on the cover. Do you remember that photo shoot?
You did, yeah.
What a moment in time that was.
Yes. You immediately came back and had a book tour.
Yeah. When you played that clip of Barack Obama, I thought that he was endorsing your show.
Right.
I said, wow, okay. That's interesting.
That would be interesting.
I haven't heard Barack Obama's voice in a little while. Ever, you know, it's only around election time do we hear from him. And
right.
Very late in the race.
I'll tell you what, the biggest scandal is going to be that library is. Did you see what an ugly
Is it even happening? I mean, it's been
oh, yeah.
under construction.
I mean, he's got a basketball court. He says, I don't want it to be a mausoleum. I want it to be someplace we go to.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you look at it?
you think it's ugly?
Oh, my goodness. Have you seen it? You're from Chicago.
Yeah, kind of. Not really.
You lived there for a while.
Yeah, sort of.
But he also was supposed to revitalize the neighborhood. All he did was drive costs off, and now people can't live there.
Yeah, but I thought that it was, when I say, is it still happening? It's like still deeply under construction.
Right. And when did he leave
office? Decades later.
2016.
I know.
It's crazy. You know Trump's going to have it built in a year and a half. And it's going to be in Florida. And it's going to be bigger.
And it's going to be all gold.
He's going to say, it's probably bigger. They tell me it's bigger than Disney.
Yeah.
It's going to be bigger, more. Right.
And huge crowds of people can fit in.
Oh, yeah.
I like what he's doing with the ballroom. I mean, can you believe that when there are state dinners that take place at the White House, they have to move it outside?
Yeah.
So we have leaders of all of these countries around the world, the most important people in politics, and we're hosting them in a tent outside. And that was the plan.
I have a prediction. I bet you when Democrats start running, they're going to start saying, the first thing I'm doing is taking down that ballroom.
Oh, my God.
You know they're going to be saying that.
No, you know what? I disagree, because they're going to use it. They're going to see how beautiful it is.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're going to say, this was no big deal.
But the people are outraged by it. Hillary Clinton says, it's not his house. It's your house. And he's destroying it. Gavin Newsom ripping apart the White House like he's ripping apart the Constitution. CNN headline, the new East Wing, Caesar's Palace meets the Palace of Versailles.
Wow. You know, who was the president that put the bowling alley in? Like, I could understand.
Was that Nixon?
I could understand a little bit
recreation.
Of outrage over that. Like,
right.
Really?
Bowling alley, is that
like,
classic?
Are we doing that?
So here's the crazy thing. When you go through a White House tour, that over the Truman, by the way, there's a archway by the bowling alley, and there's burn marks from when the British burned it down. They left that part that was still standing. And they keep the burn marks
there.
Okay,
good. So they didn't touch that. That
yeah.
piece of history. That's amazing.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That is so cool. I should go on a White House tour. It's been a while.
I think
I've
you should.
I've only been on one in my life.
What else? So you see the pictures which Truman did. He literally gutted the whole thing, both floors. And they put the both floors back and put the – but that had to be done. The whole place was falling apart. It was an absolute – I mean, it's an old building. But the White House says, for more than a century, U.S. presidents have been renovating, expanding, and modernizing the White House to meet the needs of present day. Now in 2025, President Trump is carrying forward that legacy, breaking ground on a grand ballroom, a transformative addition that will significantly increase the White House's capacity to host major functions, honoring world leaders and foreign nations and other dignitaries. Fine. The only thing is they didn't submit plans yet. So
I know.
No, yeah.
That's so Trump.
No,
he's like,
really,
I'm just going to do it.
Yet.
Can I give you a fun fact about this?
Yes.
Horticulturalists.
Yes.
Is that the first time that word has been used on this show today?
I thought it was some type of sexual addiction.
No, it's people that are they're knowledgeable about plants.
Right.
They attacked Theodore Roosevelt for clearing plant-growing houses to create the West Wing.
Wow.
According to the White House Historical Association, so President Trump is not the first person to be attacked for making renovations. And Truman's pricey, now iconic balcony was criticized. Imagine if that balcony that's so famous now was never put
there. The Truman balcony. So I want you to hear Caroline Levitt yesterday, cut 47.
In fact, President Obama notably complained that during his tenure, he had to hold a state visit on the South Lawn and get a very expensive tent. If you talk to journalists who have covered the White House for decades, as I do here every single day, they will also tell you that administration after administration have publicly and privately spoken about the need for a larger event space. So while many presidents have privately dreamt about this, it's President Trump who is actually doing something about it.
So,
yep. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. And in 2010, President Trump, who was not president, no political aspirations, spoke to David Axelrod and said, listen, let me get in there. Let me create a ballroom for you guys. And at the time, there was some crisis going on. I don't remember which one it was, but he said, let me get back to you, David Axelrod, after this crisis. Was it the oil spill? I don't know.
Well, they also had government lockdown, too.
Yeah. And it just sort of disappeared. They just didn't do anything with it. And Axelrod later said, I should have taken Trump up on that.
So, you know, it's
Can
interesting.
You believe that?
What about what he did in the Rose Garden? He kind of put a floor overneath it because women wear heels like Carly Shimkus.
Yes, and we irrigate the ground with our heels.
Reluctantly.
Which is why if you ever have an outdoor wedding, a lot of your female guests will wear wedges. Do you know what a wedge is?
No.
It's like a platform shoe without a heel, so it still gives you height, but you won't get sink into the ground.
Have you thought about cleats?
Well, that will make multiple holes at once, I hear.
Right, but it keeps you upright.
I should buy some. Wear them on Fox and Friends.
I think our wedding cleats are underrated.
Let's start a trend.
Thanks, Carly.
We all love a legendary comeback. And Degree Original Cool Rush is back and better than ever. Cool Rush isn't just a scent. It's a movement, a fan favorite that delivers bold, fresh vibes and all-day sweat protection. Whether you have a man that spends hours in the gym, heads into the office early, or is just trying to stay fresh on a long day, Cool Rush has their back. Head to your local Walmart or Target and grab Degree Cool Rush, the fan favorite scent from the world's number one antiperspirant brand.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. This hour, we're going to be joined by Molly Hemingway. Don't ask me how I know. And Brett Baer is going to be here at some point. Brand new book out. He's on Special Report just about every night. Before we get to Molly, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Russia has not changed its position compared to the understandings reached during the extensive negotiations between Putin and Trump in Alaska.
Yeah, you go. Trump, Putin, too, on hold as Rubio and Lavrov have talks, and it shows this would be a waste of time for President Trump. I say give them the tomahawks, blast them with the Senate sanctions, and then let Ukraine win.
Number two.
I'd love to meet with them. I just want them to open up the country first. I would like to meet with both of them, but I set one little caveat. I will only meet if they let the country open. They have to let the country open.
Shut down now at 4 weeks and counting as Dem leaders reach out directly to Trump on Tuesday to make a deal. Trump has made it clear, as you just heard, open the government first.
Number one.
Hey, New Jersey. This is Barack Obama, and I want to talk to you about my friend Mikey Sherrill.
Really?
Mikey is a mom who will drive down costs for New Jersey families.
I can't wait to hear that spot ends. Now it's getting interesting. Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial candidates bring out the big guns as they watch their commanding lead shrink to single digits and maybe in the margin of error. We look at who's getting what and why the DNC is now writing a $500,000 check to try to save the day and the election. And we preview tonight's debate in New York City. In terms of it being a national story, I think it is. Zohran Mamdani up by about 12 points in most polls, and Cuomo, and then Sliwa, last debate tonight. Now, Molly, I know you're just visiting New York. You're a Washington woman, a woman of the Washington region. But your thoughts about the national interest on this debate?
On the Mamdani debate?
Is that what you're calling it now? You mean the New York City mayoral debate?
Well, it does seem like he has. A lot of people think that he will be able to pull it out, and I think there's reason for that. There's national interest because New York City is such an important place for the country, and having a city that's run well is something that matters
to
all Americans.
And do you think that he has the skill set to run our city well?
I think that it's a huge threat if he were to get in, and I hope that, and you know, he's odds-on favorite right now to win. I hope that people are prepared to thwart whatever he wants to do that might violate the civil rights of New Yorkers or threaten the financial industry. There are means to fight this if there are illegal or unconstitutional things he's doing, and I think people should be prepping for that.
Right, but instead of building, you're going to be fighting to keep an equilibrium that we need to improve on.
But New York City is worth fighting.
So one of your favorite shows you opened up to me, and I hope I'm not breaking your confidence, is Special Report. Am I right, Molly?
It's true.
Right. So I don't want to put you in an awkward spot. Andrew Cuomo was on Special Report last night, and he knows time's running out. Cut five.
There is no doubt that he is a socialist, and there is an enthusiasm, especially among young people, for the socialist philosophy. His policies, he's anti-business as we know it, anti-corporation, anti-wealth, anti-police, anti-Semitic policies, pro-Gaza, pro-Palestine. This is very popular on the far, far left of the Democratic Party. There is no doubt.
There is no doubt that there's a lot online, too, as the disgraced governor tries to become the not-so-disgraced mayor. Will he be able to close the gap? That's why Bret Baier came to New York City. He wanted to hear remotely, because Andrew Cuomo was on the studio, directly from him. And this is the same Bret Baier who just one day ago put out to rescue the American spirit, Teddy Roosevelt, and the birth of a superpower. It's a special, by the way, for your visual pleasure on Fox Nation right now. Welcome back, Bret.
Thank you. 2 days in a row.
I mean, if you consider that I was a finalist to be on your panel at the last minute, I got the starting spot.
Yeah.
And now today is three. It is three appearances in 2 days.
It's shocking. But again, Molly, great to see you.
Good to see you.
But it shouldn't be about me. It should really be about the mayoral debate tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be fireworks, though.
I think, you know, Cuomo, I'm not sure that the answers deliver. You know, he can't really explain why, if it's so dangerous, why Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries haven't endorsed him. Or he can't explain why Curtis Sliwa should get out of the race, and yet he's trailing, even if he's out of the race, significantly. Is there time? Yes. Could something happen tonight that changes the dynamic? Yes. Most likely, is it going to? Probably not.
But also, he's had months to tear down this other candidate, Mamdani. He could have increased his negatives throughout the summer, and he hasn't really landed a punch the entire time.
He doesn't do much work. He doesn't do much campaigning.
It seems tired, doesn't it? It seems tired.
Well, he just goes, I can't believe this guy's winning. I thought I should have won by now. He thought, I'm going to sprint, win the primary. I'll beat Sliwa in the general. It's going to be easy. Then I'll take over. But here's the thing that you asked and nobody asked. You said, why didn't Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries actually endorse you? We're asking the question, why didn't they endorse the Democratic nominee? And they're still considering it. We have to have another conversation, because they know that if this becomes the state of the, if he becomes the hottest politician leading to the midterms, Republicans will thrive in that.
100%. There will be a lot of Republicans in purple states that say, thank you, Mamdani. Because it'll be the albatross that they try to put around the Democratic candidate's neck in whatever race they're following.
But again, nobody should want this for a city that is as important as New York. And even if it would be good for Republicans, if they could say the Democrat Party has become so extreme that they're openly electing people like this socialist who hates the cops, who's anti-Semitic, all these things, it's just something we can't afford as a country, because our cities are what make us great, too.
And by the way, people say, well, the mayor's not going to have this power. But if he wins by 20, and that is a left-wing assembly in Albany, they're going to say, I'm going to go along with this guy. The problem is Eric Adams, who tend to be moderate. They didn't like the moderate. But if you get a left-winger up there, they'll go, yeah, I'll up taxes. That'll be fine. And the governor, who's scared to death to lose to Elise Stefanik, will probably go, yeah, I'm going to go on with this because I can't lose my Democratic
base.
Well,
and the governor is that's why she endorsed him in the first place, because she was worried about a primary challenge herself. Right. She knows that the left of her party has become rabid.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a good thing for New York. I'm just saying that that's how Republicans look at it. If you mean to tell me Elise Stefanik is not looking at this race saying this could this could be a different thing.
Why do you think that affects her against Hochul?
Because it will be the party, the Democratic Party, the focus, the oxygen coming out will be a lot of what's happening here if he's mayor.
I think New Yorkers will be more likely to counter the extremist mayor with a Republican governor, as opposed to a moderate mayor who that Eric Adams was looked at as a moderate mayor, even though many people think incompetent. But I would take Eric Adams over the whole field.
I also wonder if Mamdani gets in, if he won't be counseled by Democrats to moderate his position somewhat, lest he destroy the entire party.
little Al Michaels lest. You know, that Al Michaels, who I see OJ. But I would say a couple of things. I don't think he can be controlled. I think he's got a mission. And if he was going to be controlled, he would have moderated a lot of his mission. Oh, yeah, sorry I wrote that thing about George Floyd. I love the cops and have a big press conference with it. But instead, he gets pushed into it by Martha McCallum to apologize. Globalize the Intifada. I don't see anything wrong with that. It took him three interviews to walk that back. So,
or Hamas put the weapons down. It was two different answers. Martha's answer and then the answer on the debate stage.
Yeah. So to me, if he was going to moderate, this is as moderate as we're going to see him. Now, I thought yesterday was so telling because yesterday, Canal Streets is famous for these knockoffs, these ripoffs that China mostly puts out, these handbags and different products. And ICE raided them. They're run by illegal immigrants. This is a counterfeiting operation. ICE is doing what they're supposed to be doing. And New Yorkers came out to fight ICE, which is horrific. And then Mamdani came out to call out ICE. This is candidate Mamdani. Can you imagine Mayor Mamdani? He's going to be Pritzker 2.0.
Well, there are a lot of Democrat mayors who are doing this as well in Chicago and Portland. The idea that they have, I mean, I totally understand that cities and states and the federal government have different competing interests, but it's pretty clear that immigration is a federal responsibility. And the idea that they would fight against a proper federal role, I mean, it is the kind of thing that could lead to a great deal of conflict.
You know, by the way, that leaves me to a tease. I have an interview with Illinois Governor Pritzker in D.C. tomorrow on set on Special Report.
That is fantastic.
So you talk about a governor who's out there aggressively pushing back on ICE and talking about Trump.
Call them thugs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to ask the governor of Illinois.
How hard was it to get that interview?
We've been trying for a long time.
And what do you think the reason that he gave in?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't promise we were going to talk about anything specific. He's going to be in D.C.
So I saw a poll that has Newsom in second, Kamala Harris is in first, and with 8% of the vote, I think it was, if I remember correctly, Newsom had 23, Harris had 23, Newsom had 13, and Pritzker had 8% of the vote. I know how early it is, but he considers himself a presidential candidate. Is there any question?
No, not at all. I mean, I think he's in the game, and he's doing a lot of what he's doing to get national attention.
Do you know, I was going to do this segue, which I think is actually better than yours. Molly, you know who the first police commissioner of New York was, Teddy Roosevelt. So he came in, made cops wear go to a mini academy, had them go into uniform. He insisted they not drink on the job. He was grabbing them out of the bars and bringing them and forcing them out and bringing the press along. So when he did break down for find the illegal immigrant operations in sweatshops, he would bring the press so they'd write the stories, make him a hero, and they would work for everybody.
And he'd walk around New York at night with a long black jacket on with a press reporter going from borough to borough.
Right. That is all part of the Teddy Roosevelt story that you're going to find to rescue the American spirit. Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower. If you're more visual of a person, go on Fox Nation. It dropped yesterday. It's a whole hour special. It'll give you an idea what you're going to get in the book. Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Molly Hemingway's here. Her body language says she's not happy, but she seems nice in the breaks. She's a Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief of The Federalist. Brett Baer is here, chief political anchor on Special Report. People are still buzzing about my appearance on the panel. I'm just talking about social media. I go on all the time with all the kids. They're also talking about your book, To Rescue the American Spirit, rocketing up the charts on Amazon. Soon we'll find out about the New York Times, Teddy Roosevelt and the birth of a superpower. I'll tell you, I did Teddy and Booker T, and your footage, you got so much more footage in your special than I got. How did you get the film stuff?
We just dug in. We asked the archives to get stuff, and it was great. The hour is a great encapsulation of his life. The book, as you know, is kind of focused on his wish to be forward-leaning and have America lead the world, but it bounces back to how he gets to this point. The Booker T thing, I loved your book, and that moment when he hosts Booker T in the White House, he just fully doesn't realize how significant that dinner is and what it means beyond his conversation with Booker T.
And it ends up one person looked at the logs, Molly, something you would do, and said Booker T. Washington had dinner with the family, and it ended up becoming this national disgrace. And I do it in the show, History, Liberty, and Laughs, that America's still buzzing about when I go on stage, and I reenact that moment, and then we put up the headlines from around the country. It is horrific. But here's the key. John McCain loses to Barack Obama, and he says it was a time when having a black man in a White House was a national scandal. Now, now he'll be hosting that dinner. It shows America has made progress. A lot of people don't understand that we've made progress.
Well, it's also interesting how the left came to hate Teddy Roosevelt, even taking down his statue here in New York City.
Which is crazy.
Which is nuts.
Which is insane. Not just because
in front of the Museum of Natural History, which he founded.
What he accomplished, but also his great ties to New York, as you pointed out.
Well, not only that, you can't put him in a box. I mean, he was conservative and Republican, but he was progressive. And there were some Republicans who had a real big problem with him. J.P. Morgan, others. He files 40 antitrust lawsuits as president. He fights the first labor dispute in a coal mining strike in 1902.
I just think that's a great point to highlight, too. A lot of people, they have a conception of the Republican Party that goes back to Reagan or maybe to Goldwater. But in fact, the Republican Party has had these streams throughout its history, including, you know, with this progressive model that Teddy promoted.
And I'll bring you to today. So Teddy Roosevelt gets involved in the Japanese-Russia war, which you write about. But it's tilted towards Russia. And because of that, Japan has this hatred towards us. And many people think it laid the groundwork for Japan's anger towards us in the region that led them taking an aggressive stance against us bombing Pearl Harbor in World War II. So it's how you stop a war has everything to do with how that war, what happens after that war. That's what concerns me about Ukraine. I know it's easy to say, let's just stop killing. But if we don't stop it the right way, we just postponed the next invasion.
Yeah, and I think there are real questions about what's going to happen next. I mean, the fact that Rubio and Lavrov talk and they canceled that meeting in Hungary, you know, I think there is a battle inside the administration about next steps. And, you know, there's all kinds of thoughts about what to do, but putting pressure on Russia seems like it's the thing that has worked most.
Molly, your thoughts?
Just that this is a very difficult situation because there's no conventional way to win a war against Russia. I mean, they have incredible nuclear power. They have perfected the model of just throwing bodies at war. I mean, they just seem to have a low value for losing lives. They think that's a totally appropriate way to go. And so you have to have a strategy. And so as people want this to continue, they should lay out exactly how it is that continuing things will lead to a better situation. Although I totally agree that Trump and many people in the White House have seen that pressure needs to be applied on Putin.
Molly, can I give you my scenario? They're going to aim for the infrastructure. They're already doing tremendous damage in a gas station. Russia's a gas station. That's all it is. Basically, it's their only industry. There's now long lines, people to get the utility costs are going through, long lines to get gas. And now if you give them the Tomahawk weapons, they'll do actual damage. And remember, they had nukes in Afghanistan, but nukes don't work in Afghanistan. And you're not going to use nuclear weapons. It's everything you're going to use is going to blow back in your own country. So nuclear weapons are not an issue in Ukraine. And they would have used them already. All they do is rattle the cages. They, as General Keane says, their army is bad and it's getting worse. They're going to Africa, begging people to fight in Africa for a country of 150 million. I mean, that's how pathetic they are because they're afraid of drafting people of means as kids because that's how they were forced to withdraw from Afghanistan.
They also have existential issues in play in needing access to water that need to be resolved. There's leverage that
can be took
played.
Crimea. Obama said they had to give it back, and then he left.
Then they had a different time zone.
Right.
Within a few days.
Right. And I think Ukraine's doing a good job of blowing up that bridge over and over again.
Over and over.
So listen, where do we get the book?
Everywhere. You can get it everywhere. There was a little hitch with Amazon this week with the AWS. It's a bad timing for a book launch, but it doesn't affect sales. So go out and buy it. It's going to arrive when you order it. you know, and we'll track it after it's all the sales
and,
are in.
And the good thing is when you get your events going, you love talking about this stuff.
I do.
So you bring it to life, and it's important. Year 250 to know about the figures that brought us here. Molly, great to see you.
Great to see
you. Are
you
an outnumbered?
Yes.
I thought so. I knew that. I'm your first stop. Are you an outnumbered? You were
I'm
on
not.
Yesterday.
I was on yesterday.
What are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm just going to hang out.
All right, good. Yeah, you're really dressed up. Back in a moment.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
An elite team of technological experts we call the Revengers to help us trick scammers into revealing their identities and catching them red-handed.
We are hunting down scammers, wherever they hide.
Unlock it!
And bringing justice to our victims.
This is Scammed, getting even.
And this is all part of a special. On Fox Nation, a brand new series called Scam Getting Even. It premieres today, so you can go. Another reason to get the best streaming service in the country. And with me in studio, if you're watching our stream, Ashton Bingham and Art Kulik. Guys, welcome.
Brian, thanks for having us.
Fresh off your appearance on Fox and Friends.
Yes.
First, tell me how you became somebody that was interested in unmasking the scam.
I think we both always had a passion for justice.
Right.
We came together as best friends about 15 years ago, and both moved to Los Angeles with dreams of being content creators, entertainers, and as I was telling you off camera, we kind of stumbled into it in 2016 when I received a robocall, wasted the guy's time, and the call went crazy.
What was the robocall?
It was one of those fake IRS calls where they're like, hey, you got to pay your taxes, back due taxes, or we're going to come arrest you right now. And I knew it was fake, but I wanted to waste his time and just make a funny video, and it ended up going crazy viral.
So you
viral.
Just quickly, you get this call, mm-hmm. and then you take out your iPhone?
Yeah, I was recording on an old MacBook webcam, like with 4 pixels.
But what made you like? Why were you on your?
I don't know. I think I was. I mean, we had already opened. We had actually just opened Trilogy as like a production company, like maybe a month prior.
Right.
And so I had content creation on my mind, but I wasn't thinking this was going to be anything. Like I thought I was going to make a fun Facebook video for my friends.
I remember Ashton. You know? We used to live together. He was my roommate, unfortunately. And one of the morning, he was like grumpy, going to the kitchen. He was like, "Brother, do you receive like these robocalls? They're so annoying." He was like, "I'm getting like bombarding 10 phone calls per day." I was like, no, never had one. And he just said something to himself, all right, then maybe I will answer it one day.
And I thought it would last like 3 minutes, and the call was like 50.
And what were they trying to say? Intimidate you to pay them?
Telling them, I'm going to be arrested. You know, classic pressure, gift cards, go to Target, get the thing. I mean, it's very ridiculous on paper. But, you know, of course, since then, we've learned how deep these scams go and how crazy they are. But he was just trying to get money out of me. I was just wasting his time. I was playing aloof, just playing dumb, just letting him do his thing. And he got so mad that I wasted almost an hour of his time that he went off, screamed at me. He was taking credit for 9/11. He was like, I'm going to come and kill you. I know you're in California. I'm going to come tomorrow and get you. Like, actually, at the time, it freaked me out. But I still posted the video, and it went, like, at this point, it's got like 300 million views or something.
300 million.
Yeah.
And then you thought to yourself, what?
Well, you and I were already working on stuff.
Right.
We wanted a platform to be us, entertain people. We had spent many years in Hollywood trying to fit into the boxes that they want to put you in. And we're like, you know what? This is the vehicle right here. This is allowing us to be kind of an Impractical Joker style of a duo. We can do something that's important to raise awareness about. There's not a lot of this right now. Let's give it a shot. And so we just started making videos together, wasting their time.
At that time, it's such a niche category on YouTube from back in the days to till present day. Obviously, community got better. But when we started, it was like 2-3 content creators. And those content creators, you know, hackers, whatever you call them, social engineering people, they would not show the face. So it's like nobody, and especially us, we're so different, and we like, you put us together, some magic happen, and we just like start doing Impractical Jokers and just going with different type of scams and having a lot of fun with it, but also educating, you know, people about this.
Well, so tell me how you play this out. Now, I saw some of the video already. Mm-hmm. So give me an idea. So what happens is they come after you or you go after them.
As far as the scammers go, we go after them. In this show,
so
in particular,
people can get in touch with you to say I'm being scammed.
Yeah,
that's right.
And we try to help them.
We're fortunate enough to have built an audience, and now we get inundated with more submissions than we can handle. To be honest, but it's heartbreaking. You read these stories every day, but this show has given us an outlet, a platform for us to be able to, you know, see these victims, interview them, get their story, and actually pursue, with the help of our revengers in the show, actually pursue the scammers and bring them to justice.
We have public submission right on our YouTube channel, Trilogy Media. So we will go and we will do the interviews. We're going to talk to the victims. We're going to see like what kind of story, and go through the story, meet the victims, and you learn, all right, how did you get scammed? How did you move, like how scammers took your money? And we, you know, follow the money, you're going to find the bad guy. And we learn and we go either confront, working together with police, do whatever it takes.
Do you get the cops involved?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That started, we learned a lot about that over the course of, you know, since 2020, since we've been confronting them in person. We would notice that we'd post a video and like a year later, we'd get a call from, you know, U.S. government or an email from .gov. And they'd be like, hey, we're now looking into this thing that you happened to cross over. Can we get your raw footage? Sure, no problem. Now it's gained some traction, especially with the show. We've been able to do collaborative efforts. We're actually seeing more law enforcement take action on scam baits, which is huge. And it's never really been done before. So the fact that they're actually teaming up with us and listening to us, and we just had a federal indictment that was for like a $65 million scam.
Your goal is to get their money back?
That would be nice. It's usually not possible.
That's usually not the case.
And it's out of our hands if it is.
Right.
You know.
But what we can do, because we have amazing platform and we have amazing fans, we will open GoFundMe for some cases and try to get money, some money back.
We want to play out the scam.
GoFundMe?
Yeah. We've done that a few times. Yeah.
GoFundMe, is there a big place where they scam?
No, to help victims out.
To help victims.
Yeah. If they let us tell their story publicly and take the vulnerability that comes with saying that I was a victim to a scam.
So there's categories that we're going to see on the Fox Nation special. Number mm-hmm. one, tech support scams.
Yep, right.
So we're here to help you, or Apple or somebody else. So
pop-up scam on your computer.
Can you give me an idea how they lure me in?
It'll come either with a, like you said, a pop-up on your screen. What's really prolific right now is emails with fake invoices attached from companies. They'll impersonate PayPal or Amazon. And they'll send you a receipt for a purchase that you didn't make. And we're like, I didn't make this purchase. It's $500. I don't want to pay for this. And they're encouraging you to call the number back. You call the number back, you get a scam call center. And they're telling you, oh, it must be a mistake. We'll fix it for you. And then they want remote access to your computer. It's a whole social engineering process against the victims. And once they get that access, they have access to your banks. They have access to everything. And they convince you that your money is in jeopardy and you have to move it somewhere else to keep it safe. And that's where the scam comes in.
So was here with Ashton Bingham and Art Kulik, and they have this brand new series on Fox Nation called Scammed, Getting Even. It premieres today, so you can go right now on Fox Nation, but don't leave yet. Art, in particular, for example, if I get lured in and I think that PayPal, for example, someone charged on my PayPal account.
Right.
So I go in and I call the number and I'm saying, oh, you're going to get this fixed. So by the time I'm hit and I lose, let's say, thousands of dollars, I contact you. And then what do you do? Can you possibly bring them out?
Well, you don't have to
track them down. You try to get yourself scammed too?
Right. Well, that's secondary. First, you have to contact FTC, right? You have to file a police report. You have to call your bank, fraud department.
You tell them to do that.
Right. Absolutely. For the victim. Yeah. Victim have to, you have to follow the procedure. Then, again, you do the public submission. You will give us like, this is what happened to me. This is fake PayPal, Venmo, whatever it was. Then we're going to call. And we're just going to do exactly what happened before. We're going to pretend to be victims, and we're going to learn what happened. And they want to move your money, right? Somebody have to pick up your money. Usually, tech support originates from India. India mafia works really good with Asian mafia here in San Francisco and Bay Area. So scammers are internationally. But somebody have to come to your house, to your grandmother's house, and move that $500,000, $100,000, $50,000, doesn't matter, right? So they will send thugs to your door, who are going to say, hey, I'm from the government, Federal Reserve, we need to secure your money. And mafia will take money from your family and going to disappear.
And when have you been able to stop this?
Oh, yeah. We're sitting in the bushes with the cameras.
Yeah. That's actually absolutely. A couple of the episodes are about this scam specifically. And we were able to collaborate with Homeland Security, FBI, and some law enforcement out in Arkansas, and actually stage stings with this exact thing. So we pretend to be old. I put on a mask. I do a pretty good old man voice, and I get them to come to my house and pick up the money. But instead of getting the money, they get handcuffs.
They're going to get arrested.
Here's an example of the intersection starting to stop a scam mid-scam.
It's him.
Let's go.
So we're looking for a scammer, the guy that we're going after. He instructed our victim to send money to you. We'd like to figure out kind of what's going on. So how do you explain
Look,
that?
Did I respond or anything?
You kept the money. Yeah, you got the money. No one sent it back to me.
You get it.
See how that looks really bad,
yeah,
right?
Okay, there's no sense in talking then. There's no sense in talking.
All right.
So bring us up to date. Where was that?
That was in Maryland.
Maryland.
My God, we've been so many places since then. He's a cash mule, you know, allegedly. Cash mule, we were instructed by a Nigerian scammer. The scammer that was scamming Anne from that episode was instructing me as who I was playing her grandson, I believe. He believed I was her grandson. I was helping him move her money. He was instructing me to send it to people around the country, and he was one of them.
And you had to go there. And then are cops aware of this at the time when you're doing this?
Oftentimes,
I mean, who knows that guy? I looked at some of that video. I'm thinking this guy might have a gun.
Yeah, it's happened. Absolutely.
So do you call the cops ahead of time?
Not really. Like, at this time, again, for the show, like, we blessed that we have a bigger budget than YouTube. We have security.
Oh, you have your own?
Yeah, yeah. We will have security who will come with
Plus,
us.
Plus, you're a big guy. No one's messing with you.
Well, yeah, like,
six? They'll try, yeah.
6'5", yeah, they will try. You would not believe, like, again, when it comes to when you have a gun, doesn't matter how big you are, absolutely. Right? You get shot, you get shot. So we still went and we did police report. We still notified police and everything. But we went only with our security and we asked questions. And he knew what happened. We're like, somebody sent you money and you keep that money. You didn't return it. Like, what's wrong with you? And he was like, yeah, well, I was like, how did you find this guy? He was like, I was in the grocery store. He came to me and he said, can I use your Venmo or whatever, PayPal?
Which isn't true.
Yeah.
Which it's a total scam.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because we sent him the money.
Please tell me he got arrested.
Not yet.
Not yet, but still working on it.
That's the problem. This is a problem we've had over and over and over again, long before we had any law enforcement collaboration. When we're coming in and somebody we know is involved, the law enforcement, I love them to death, but they take forever. And so if it's a case like in Arkansas where we can have a pre-set up operation and we can show the proof of our scam bait and they come to us, they can get arrested on the spot. But when we're coming into a scam that's already happening and we're identifying individuals through our methods, police usually can't or won't just show up and arrest them. They have to take the chain of custody of everything we've collected. They have to investigate it. They get more people involved. It's months down the line. The big federal indictment that just came out a couple months ago from San Diego was from videos we did in 2020. So we confronted these guys in 2020. We confronted like three different ones from the same kind of mafia group that we came to learn. Homeland approached us in 21 or 2. We testified in 23. And then we finally learned that they were arrested just a couple months ago. That's how long it takes.
We have more categories of scams. This could help you avoid being a victim. You might have gotten some of these emails, but there's two guys taking action, and you're looking at them right now if you're watching the stream. Ashton Bingham and Art Kulik. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Scammers not getting paid today.
Hey, Ashton, this is Austin with the Newark Police Department. I was just over there with you when we found the package. If you just give me a call back, I'm looking for that video footage of from your Google Glasses so we can see if we can get that vehicle into our system and track it down. All right, just give me a call or text me on this number. Thanks, bye.
Hello.
Hey, Patricia.
Patricia.
Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I really, you know, you witness this so many times, but when it's such a shock and it happens so quickly, you know, you have to have some reflective thoughts afterwards.
Absolutely.
You know, and so obviously that's what you go through now.
Yeah.
But the police officer, you know, followed through with, you know, his additional information and
good.
You know, thank God to you guys. I mean, I don't know what brought you to that spot at that time.
That was from the YouTube channel of Trilogy, right?
Media, yep.
Trilogy Media. That is one of the reasons that Fox Nation has a brand new series called Scam Getting Even. Ashton Bingham and Art Kulik are here. Guys, what was I listening to, Art?
It's actually one of the happy ending story that we ever came across, like as of today. Again, it's complicated, but basically, make story short, we will send a baiting package that is like fake, right? And we're going to wait until Cashmere is going to show up and pick up the package, like allegedly stolen money. When we showed up, it was our package that arrived, empty box, and it was package on a perch with $25,000 with a real victim from Amazon, right? I believe
Amazon or PayPal. Yeah,
Amazon or PayPal. Like so, and it was a returning address. So we immediately Googled the address, the cell phone number. So we called Patricia and we're like, Patricia, did you talk to Amazon, PayPal recently? She was like, no. I was like, Patricia, there is money right now sitting, and we see it. And then we can hear that there is scammer talking to Patricia saying, do not talk to them. Hang up. So she got brainwashed, but finally she came to realizing that she just sent $25,000 to pay for whatever she want to pay. And we literally holding her package in our hands.
We called the cops and they came and seized the money and got it back to her.
Wow. And what was the first? We were hearing the cops call and inquire. For
yeah.
You.
So that was after the interaction. He wanted, we had Google, like camera glasses and stuff. We have hidden cameras. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they're not Google brand, but we have actually, they're really old. They're not working too well. We're going to get new ones. But we record everything, obviously, so we have, you know, people that are walking around and the whole interaction. He wanted the raw footage of that to be able to put in his report, which we always provide, of
course. We showed up 2 minutes before thugs showed up to pick up that money, that stolen money from elderly people. And we saw that cash mule in the corner show up with a package. They, you know, collect 10, 20 packages per day. And we said, not today. This package, this money going back to the
victim.
How did
you know to show up there?
Throughout the scam bait, when we're pretending to be victims, and we were collabing on this one, they gave us instructions on where the victim is supposed to send the money. In this case, it was to an address. Came to find out that address was vacant. So that they do that sometimes. Sometimes the cash mule lives there. Sometimes it's vacant. Packages get dropped off, and then somebody will come and just scoop it up. And they know it's they go on, you know, Zillow or whatever. They'll find vacant residences, and they'll use them. So in this case, lots of scammers were sending it to this door, and ours just happened to arrive at the exact same moment as Patricia's actual money. And you could spot it from a mile away because they tell you to wrap it in a bunch of duct tape. So we saw it. And we're like, that's a scam. That's a scam package. 100% we call the cops. And
could I throw some scams at you and you tell me how it goes down? Debt collection scams. Give me an idea. Like, how would I do I get hit by an email? Is it a phone call?
All of the above for those.
Do they usually know your debt on your credit card? And is that what hit home?
They know more than you'll want them to know, especially with like public databases. And, you know, if they can get a hold of your email or, God forbid, your social security number, they can run credit checks. And, you know, that's what I think. Honestly, I think everybody should have their credit locked unless you're going to use it, you know. But, yeah, they'll use that against you. They'll advance fee scam, same thing. They'll mm-hmm. get you to try to pay something up front in hopes of helping you get out of a bad situation and then just disappear.
Virtual kidnapping. You mean I have your son, I have your daughter, mm-hmm. I need a scam.
It's actually one of those scams.
And AI can do the voice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we literally just had this conversation. What happened to you?
They tried to get my grandma with that grandma? One. Yeah, they impersonated my voice. They called my grandma. This is a number of years back. But they said, my grandma would call me AJ. They said, hey, grandma, it's AJ. I'm in Mexico. I just got arrested for DUI. I need bail money right now. And she didn't know what to do. Thankfully, she called my aunt, who verified it with me that wasn't true. But unfortunately, a lot of people do fall for it.
And with AI, they can totally
with
mirror
AI
the
right now. It's absolutely this is catastrophe.
But what do you recommend if that happens to somebody?
Well, first of all, you need to set up a password between
set up
you,
a password.
Password, right? Only like you have kids, right?
Yeah.
So something only your kids know. Something between you and kids. So if you call somebody impersonates you and gonna call your kids and ask for something. You can throw that question. Hey, Dad, what this and this? So it has to be only between family members.
All right. So check out their series. It's now on Fox Nation. It is called Scammed, Getting Even. And that's what they try to do for everybody if they can get to you in time. Ashton Bingham, Art Kulik, it's a win-win. Great series, great TV, and you're helping people.
Thank you, Brian.
Nice
Thank
job.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate
All right,
that.
Brian Kilmeade, keep it here.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, so glad you're there. It's Brian Kilmeade here at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're just blocks away. ICE was met with resistance, not at their arrest victims. That would be on Canal Street, which is a famous street where a lot of knockoffs and stolen items are fenced. A lot of them by illegal immigrants, so ICE went there, and they were attacked by fellow New Yorkers. Absolute disgrace. Bottom of the hour, Andy McCarthy will be with us, Fox News contributor, former U.S. Attorney for Southern District of New York. He's going to look at the Comey case, the possible Brennan case, and other people that could be indicted, as well as the president suing for $230 million for the hell he's been put through by the federal government. So, by the way, quick note, we have the Patriot Awards coming up November 6th. Some tickets still left at the Tillis Center, Long Island University, foxnation.com/Patriot Awards. So before we get to Carl, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Russia has not changed its position compared to the understandings reached during the extensive negotiations between Putin and Trump in Alaska.
Trump, Putin, too, on hold as Rubio and Lavrov talk, and it shows that this would be a waste of time for the president. I say give them the tomahawk, blast them with sentence sanctions, and let Ukraine win.
Number two.
I'd love to meet with them. I just want them to open up the country first. I would like to meet with both of them, but I set one little caveat. I will only meet if they let the country open. They have to let the country open.
Yep. Shut down now at 4 weeks and counting as Dem leaders reach out directly to Trump on Tuesday to make a deal. Trump has made it clear. You open up the government and we can talk.
Number one.
Hey, New Jersey. This is Barack Obama, and I want to talk to you about my friend Mikey Sherrill. Mikey is a mom who will drive down costs for New Jersey families.
She just doesn't know how, but it sounds good, and the music is great, and Barack Obama likes to talk. Now it's getting interesting. Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial candidates bring out big guns as they watch their commanding leads shrink in their blue states. We look at the politics. We look at the polls. We look at the game plans and preview New York City's mayoral debate tonight. So nobody better to talk to about politics, as we even have intrigue on the off-year election, than Carl Rove, Carl, Fox News contributor. Carl, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Carl, first off, on the debate tonight, is the die been cast? Has Mamdani won already?
Well, he's dead, and the first... And remember, in the city of New York, 68.5% of the voters are registered Democrats.
You know, Carl, what I'm going to do is we're going to get you on a better line. So we'll try it again. We'll reset and come back with Carl Rove on this very issue. But when the New York City mayor's race, it's Curtis Sliwa, Zohran Mamdani, and Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo thinks his path to victory is getting Republicans to vote for him. He now has 34% of the vote. Remember, at one point, Molly Hemingway reminded me of this earlier. He told pro-lifers in New York to leave, right? He said he didn't care about them leaving. Mayor de Blasio, too. So a lot of people remember that. A lot of Republicans remember that. Here's Cuomo yesterday, cut five, about how bad Mamdani would be.
There is no doubt that he is a socialist. And there is an enthusiasm, especially among young people, for the socialist philosophy. His policies, he's anti-business as we know it, anti-corporation, anti-wealth, anti-police, anti-Semitic policies, pro-Gaza, pro-Palestine. This is very popular on the far, far left of the Democratic Party. There is no doubt.
And he's acting like an analyst, but he's saying, I don't recognize this party, and I certainly don't recognize the beliefs of the front runner. Now let's go back to Carl Rove. Carl, so Andrew Cuomo's going on conservative outlets trying to win over Republicans. Is that his path to making this a race?
Well, if there are Democrats who are disgruntled with Mamdani, that they're not enough to win the election alone. And yes, he has to get independents and Republicans to vote for him. And that's why Silva's presence on the ballot is a problem for Cuomo. But remember, I mean, yes, the advantage is to Mamdani because, as I said, 68.5% of the active voters in New York are registered Democrats. In fact, if you look at it, of the people who express a party identification, it's 82%. So the fact is he has a big advantage. Will he win by 68%? No. Is he likely to win? Yes. Is he likely to win with in a three-way race? Sure. But it says something that this is not put away and that we are sitting here thinking about as we get close to the end about the Democratic nominee potentially winning by, you know, within the low 50s.
So Curtis Sliwa says he's not dropping out. The president thinks he's a perennial candidate, has not endorsed him. He's a true conservative. What do you think?
Well, you know, look, he is not going to win. And the question is, does he do himself, and does he do the conservative cause in the long run, a better thing by pulling out now? Even if Cuomo loses, it will be seen as a statement, and will, you know, an attempt to stop the city from having a Democratic socialist mayor. And I think in the long run that will help both him and the Republican cause. But if he stays in, people are going to say, you know, well, if but for him, particularly if it ends up being, you know, like 50-15-35, then people would say, well, if only he dropped out, we might have avoided this disaster.
So here's these gutless Democratic leaders from New York will not endorse or unendorse. Cut eight. Chuck Schumer.
Weigh in on the New York City mayoral race.
You know, As I said, I've worked with Mondani before, and we're continuing to have conversations.
Hakeem Jeffries.
Thank you, everybody.
Hakeem Jeffries, same thing. We're continuing to have conversations. Early voting starts Saturday. Number one, what would an endorsement mean? Number two, what does it tell you that they haven't endorsed him? These are experienced politicians.
Well, it says they don't like him and they can't support his policies and they think it's bad for New York.
So say it.
A non-endorsed, well, fine, but, you know, there is a downside to that, which is that people can then, Democrats can then say, well, you didn't endorse the nominee of the Democratic Party. We're not going to endorse you as the incumbent Democrat in office. So, you know, it's lose-lose. But you do have to give him credit. They didn't bow down and say, okay, well, he's the nominee of the party, so therefore I'm obligated to endorse him.
Well, I mean, you think but if you don't endorse intentionally, for example, Gillibrand said, I'm not endorsing him. They're saying, right. I don't know. Saying, I don't know is so gutless.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on that. And you have to give him credit to both. One of them is the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, and one is the leader of the Democrats in the House. And sometimes that puts pressures on people that cause them to make a decision. If I'm going to not endorse, as opposed to I'm opposing him.
George Will said to Bill Maher, I want him to win so America gets reminded on how bad socialism is. Does Karl Rove feel that?
Well, I don't want him to win, but if he does win, the problem for the Democratic Party is he will be the face of the Democratic Party going into the 2026 midterm elections. Republicans will seize on every goofy idea he pursues, you know, replacing the police with, you know, counselors, you know, et cetera. They'll seize on it. So, no, I don't want the greatest city in America, the financial capital of our country, to be run by a guy who is anti-capitalism, who's anti-free markets, who, you know, believes in socialism. But, you know, it is what it is.
So I want to talk about Virginia. Here's the Lieutenant Governor Winsom Sears, now within 5 points, cut 11.
So actually, those polls don't believe them. We are much closer. What we have is we are either down to or break even or up to. Those polls are historically wrong. So we're much closer. And all you have to do is look at what my opponent is doing. And you understand she doesn't believe that poll because her polls are showing her exactly what ours are, that she is in trouble because she doesn't have the common sense ideas.
So, by the way, the last poll is Virginia Commonwealth University Doug Wilder poll, and it's 49-42. It was 49-40. It was 49-37 in July, 49-40 in September. Now in October, it's 7. So if she can close the gap, and if they were so secure, Barack Obama would not be coming in to help her out. Wes Moore would not be coming in to help her out. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and look, both races in New Jersey and in Virginia are closing for different reasons, but closing nonetheless. The Democrats have a terrible candidate in New Jersey. And in Virginia, all the Democrats are enmeshed in a terrible brouhaha over these text messages from their nominee for attorney general, who tells a Republican colleague in the House of Delegates that I would put two bullets in the head of the Republican Speaker of the House of Delegates, even if I had a pistol with only two bullets, and the three people in the room were Pol Pot, Adolf Hitler, and the Republican Speaker. Oh, and did I mention I would also like to see his children die in their mother's arms? I mean, and this guy, this is 2022 when he texts these messages. And his Republican colleague says, stop, please, don't you understand what you're saying? And he doubles down on it. So Now talk about endorsements. Now you've got all the Democratic candidate for governor, the two U.S. senators, all of them sort of rallying around saying, well, he's apologized. Well, no, we saw who you were. And so as a result, this race these races in Virginia are tightening as they are in New Jersey. And look, let's step back and think about this. Democrats, there are 13% more Democrats in New Jersey than there are Republicans, and that race is low single digits. And in Virginia, Spanberger, who's a more of a centrist Democrat and a much better candidate than Mikey Sherrill, is nonetheless, seeing that race tighten and is now below 50.
So if you look at Meares and Jones, Jones is the one with the ridiculous, horrific, violent right. text. Meares went from trailing by, it looks like, 9 points in July. He's now up 3 points. Do you think that right. affects the Spanberger race? Couldn't she have easily said, I said he can stay on the ballot, but I'm going to take back my endorsement. Wouldn't that have been a better move?
Right, it would have been. And look, Meares has been a terrific attorney general, widely respected, able man, and people look at that and say, oh, we left out an important fact. The Democrat candidate for attorney general was arrested for driving 117 miles an hour in a 70-mile-an-hour yes. zone and pled out, yes, I did it, and got community service, and he fulfilled his community service by working in his own political action committee. So people look at that, and not only that, but he's got a terrible record on anything that has to do with law and order. He's, soft on crime, anti-police. So the Democrats are now being forced to defend his views as well as these outrageous comments, as well as his arrest record. Oh, yes, I want to be the chief law enforcement officer, but I was driving 117 miles an hour.
So, by the way, we were in the middle of a shutdown. You might have forgotten. A lot of people that aren't getting paychecks have not forgotten. A lot of them, people live paycheck to paycheck, they think between 60 and 70% of the country. Senator John Fetterman, on what he thinks we should do about it, the Democrat, cut 22.
That impacts real people and these important kinds of jobs. Now, this is just bad political theater.
Some of your Republican colleagues have proposed nuking the filibuster to force the government to reopen. What do you
mean? Yeah, of course. Carve it out for that, absolutely. We ran on that. We ran on killing the filibuster, and now we love it. It's like carve it out so we can move on.
Is that dangerous?
Yes, because look, make an exception, and eventually it's gone, and we will now become, a country where there are dramatic swings. When one party grabs all the control, they get everything they want. And we've seen how that works in places like Europe with parliamentary democracies that go from one extreme to another extreme between election and election.
Unbelievable. Fetterman's almost being facetious in saying that, but he wants to get back to work. What's going to break this deadlock? What would you do?
Well, look, both sides need to offer the other side an off-ramp. And both sides right now think that they are advantaged by the shutdown. I think that's wrong, but that's what they think.
So the off-ramp, but if you negotiate and say, okay, we'll mess with health care in order to bring the government open, do you not want to set a precedent like that?
I think you'd have to say, look, you have my absolute commitment that we will not only discuss it, but here are some concessions we're willing to make. On it, and but we got to open up the government, and you get the win of we'll sit down and negotiate, and we'll get some stuff out of it that the country will get the government back open.
All right, Karl Rove, thanks so much. Read his columns in the Wall Street Journal too. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
While millions of Americans are feeling the squeeze, the House is on vacation. And Senate Republicans? Well, they're at the White House today, not for negotiations or to work on any path out of the shutdown, but for a pep rally. And as I've understood it, when they made comments afterwards, they didn't even talk about health care once.
That is Chuck Schumer trying to get inside the meeting yesterday between all Republican leaders and President Trump for lunch. He wanted to salute them for sticking together, but he told Rand Paul to stay home. Why? Because Rand Paul's never together. He is pretty consistent in that he is a libertarian, and a libertarian has ideals, but they're not in the practical world. Nothing to insult people like the great Kat Timpf, but if you're a legislator, you could just sit most everything out. He's against Venezuela, the operation, against the Iran bombing. He's against this continuing resolution on a budget that already passed. So the president said, you're not coming. And he frets and told his dad, and Ron Paul complained. Unbelievable. What a baby he is. But we'll see. Yesterday, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries reached out directly to the president. I don't know if it got to him, but he said, no, not until you open up the government, then I'll do it. And premiums are going up on average 18%, but you should know why. Obamacare doesn't work. It's not a Republican plan. I don't know if you've noticed. And also, there's pandemic things are in place. They gave people tax break with a certain income, and they also gave subsidies. But it turned out, when it came to who qualified, it was people who make over six figures were qualifying for the subsidies. So it was unsustainable, and it was always designed to evaporate. And that's what it did under the Big Beautiful Bill. They are trying to reverse it. They're also trying to put more money into USAID. That's not the president's agenda. They want people to be hired back, that the president wants to thin out the federal government. He won an election. So why are they not? Why is President Trump and Republicans not dealing? Why are they dealing? Why would they deal? Someone comes up to you, they invade your house and say, well, for certain, let's make a deal and we'll leave. No, no, get out of my house. And then once you get out of your house, we'll find out what your complaint is. Maybe. But right now they shut down the government because I think they're just a temper tantrum to show they're not in power. And I think it's a bad precedent if the Republicans give in. I'll tell you what, they didn't give in on Obamacare. Ted Cruz started, I think it was in 2018, and it ends up, I think, a Republican loss. It was the longest lockout, shutout ever. So I think it's pretty. I think it's a pretty big deal. Hopefully it ends soon. I was talking to some people at the White House yesterday, and I was shocked. They said, we have a skeleton staff. I said, why? He goes, because we're not getting paid, and a lot of people have left to do gig jobs. So I was talking to a few people. I go, wow, I never thought about that. I thought the executive branch got paid. It was congressional that didn't. No, staffers don't get paid. And so, you know, you do these staff jobs. It's true. You like to you got mentored. That's great. You got connections. That's fantastic. You do a lot of the work. You don't get paid much. So usually one would know, unless you inherited some money, that you're going to be paycheck to paycheck. So this is really harmful. Because landlords don't care about that. Phone bills don't care about that. Andy McCarthy next. We talk about the president's push to bring justice for everything that was done in the Russia hoax, even through today. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
They changed the report between Election Day 2016, Inauguration Day in January 2017. They changed it in December. And they changed it to say something that wasn't supported by the intelligence. And then, to make matters worse, they go up to Trump Tower on January 6, 2017, and brief the president on the dossier that they know is garbage. That someone in the CIA who's familiar with the underlying intelligence told Director Brennan, you shouldn't use this. It doesn't hold up. But his response again was, doesn't it ring true? We're going to go up, set up President Trump, and create the predicate for Mueller and all the other garbage they did in his first term. And I always point out, this is when it all began.
So that is why they're recommending some prosecution of John Brennan. Because of what we all know as Russiagate now, and James Comey, and everyone's role in it, and the role of the dossier, and Christopher Steele, and everything related to it. One by one, the president wants accountability on all this. James Comey, I think, was the first. Andy McCarthy is skeptical about the strength of the Comey case and the pretrial motions. He says it highlights the patent failure of the indictment to state a crime. So, Andy, to say skeptical is to say the least about James Comey, for in your perspective, right?
About the charge, bro. You know, I think the problem with this across the board, you know, whether it's Brennan or Comey, is you have to separate out whether they abused their positions and were dishonest versus whether on the thing that they think they have charges to bring, there's a prosecutable case. And to me, there's a big gulf between those two things. I mean, you started with Brennan. What I would say about the Brennan case is Jim Jordan is absolutely right. I mean, I wrote a book arguing that Brennan was the central figure in Russiagate. The only way I'd amend that is I think that Hillary Clinton and Obama were probably the people who were most behind it. But I thought Brennan was the central figure joining what was going on with the intelligence community with what the law enforcement side was doing. And that's out of his own mouth and some of his own testimony. The question is, if you're going to bring a false statements case is a very hard proof because it's not enough to show that the person who gave the answers was intentionally being deceptive. You have to also show that the questions were clear and that there's no other way of interpreting them other than to say that the person who gave the answers willfully lied. And I think that's the big problem with Brennan, and it's a much bigger problem with Comey.
So with Brennan, for example, Matt Gaetz said the CIA was not involved at all in the Steele dossier. That's what Brennan said. But it turns out they believe they were. For Trey Gowdy, he said to Trey, they were not used on any basis for the intelligence community assessment that was done. And we know in other dialogue and testimony from others that Brennan thought it was real, and he did actually say, doesn't it ring true or doesn't it sound like something that's true? So you're just saying it's not enough.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that if Brennan is asked about this, he's going to say, first of all, I could have not answered these questions at all. I had counsel with me. I voluntarily showed up for this interview and voluntarily gave answers. My understanding of what Gaetz and Jordan and Trey were asking was whether the Steele dossier was a FBI product or a CIA product. The Steele dossier, he will say, was out and out an FBI product that the CIA had nothing to do with in the sense that they didn't have anything to do with generating it. Now, what Jordan is trying to say is that when he said the CIA had no involvement at all, what Jordan takes that to mean is that the CIA obviously had some involvement in allowing the Steele dossier, or at least a summary of it, to get into the intelligence community assessment about the election. But what Brennan is going to say is, I understood them to be asking me about how the Steele dossier came to be. And that was not a CIA thing. That was an FBI thing. And I think that's going to be very tough to establish.
Because that's how you would coach him. But you know that he thought the dossier was an important part of getting the FISA warrants to follow people and to continue with Carter Page. To follow Carter Page. He said, did you use the FISA to file the warrants? Do you think the dossier was used? He goes, no, it wasn't used. Well, it turns out it was used, and he thought it was valid.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. In my mind, there's no question that he was being dishonest, because what he was trying to say in the 2023 testimony was that the CIA didn't generate the Steele dossier, and that institutionally they had a lot of problem with it. They thought there was tradecraft problems. So he was very cagey in trying to couch his answers in terms of what the CIA thought rather than what he personally thought. But we know that behind the scenes, he was lobbying to include it.
So let's go over to Comey. Unless you think there's something else that needs to be brought up with Brennan, because we know that this has been referred to the Department of Justice. We have no indictment.
Yeah, so, I just want to be honest. I'm not saying with Brennan there's no there. I'm just saying he has a defense.
Right. That's how you would coach him. If he was your client. Right.
I would tell him to tell the truth, Brian. What else would I tell him?
Right. Exactly. Of course. So, Annie, we know that James Comey, a grand jury, had looked at the Comey case and said, let's indict this guy. Right.
Right.
14 votes, I think it was, off the top of my head. So the FDA.
14. Yeah.
Just like, hey, we think you should invite, you know, you don't like the attorney. You like the old attorney quit in order not to bring the case, whatever. It still was up to the grand jury to decide if James Comey should be indicted. And they said yes. Now they want it dismissed. Some of the things that you bring up that I've heard before, nearly a month after the indictment, we don't know who person one and person three are. That's what his legal team says. in the indictment. I've also heard this. I've also heard that we don't know the whole case. I also heard that from Todd Blanche, he says the only people that know this whole case is the grand jury and the prosecution. So eventually the defense will get all the tools they need to find out. But they just haven't revealed it yet. Is everything I say correct?
It was correct. It's dated. Let me just update what you said. Up until the 20th of October, they didn't know who person one and person three are in the indictment. The government has now committed, according to what defense has filed in court, that person one is Hillary Clinton and person three is Daniel Richmond. So that apparently the government's planted its feet on that part of it. You know, to say that the grand jury, of course, passed on it. You know, you could also say the grand jury indicted Trump in the Alvin Bragg case. I'm not blown away by the idea that the grand jury hears what the government wants them to hear. And they don't get a defense presentation. That's just, and I'm not saying they should. The function of the grand jury is to make sure that before we send the case to trial, that there's probable cause to have a trial. I think the problem they have, Brian, is, you know, I hear what Todd is saying, but I also think you have to look at Cruz's questions, which are, there's no doubt that the indictment is centered on Cruz's questions. And one of the things that the defense emphasizes that I don't think was emphasized up until now is that Ted Cruz, in a lot of ways, and I say this as a Cruz admirer, he botched the questions here. For example, he meant to ask Comey, did you ever authorize someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source for press stories about the Trump investigation or the Clinton Foundation? But he misspoke, and he said the Clinton administration. And as a result, you know, if you're going to say Hillary Clinton is person one, that only makes sense if the question's about the Clinton Foundation. If Cruz, in misspeaking, said he was asking whether, you know, Comey ever authorized someone to be a source about the Clinton administration, then that count is going to fail because that's not what the questioning was about. You know, we know from Cruz's questioning of Comey that what he was trying to drill down on was Andrew McCabe's leak of information about the Clinton Foundation investigation to the Wall Street Journal. But that's not, Ted didn't ask the question right. He didn't say Clinton Foundation. He said Clinton administration, which gives Comey, if he needed it, I don't actually think he does the way this is structured, but if he needed it, he could say, you know, look, he said Clinton administration. I never authorized anybody to do anything about the Clinton administration.
So they're trying to find out if he authorized the leaking of Andy McCabe to the press too, right? Did James Comey authorize it? And James Comey and Andy McCabe admitted he lied, right? And did leak.
Well, Andy McCabe admitted not only – eventually he admitted that he lied, although he lied about that at the beginning too.
The deputy FBI director.
Yes, but he also said – both Comey and McCabe say that Comey did not authorize that leak. McCabe did it on his own, and he was one of two people, Comey being the other, in the FBI who was authorized to orchestrate a leak. Both McCabe and Comey say that the two of them never talked about this leak until after the Wall Street Journal – article came out. And that, Brian, I think is the reason why the government can't take the position that McCabe is person three. They have to come up with another person three. And that's why they're turning to Richmond. The problem they have is that Cruz's questions were about McCabe. They weren't about Richmond.
So Arthur Richmond, this Richmond guy, the professor, is the one when Comey resigned, he leaked his information to put into a column that Richmond wrote that had, do you believe, had classified information in it, and Comey said this, we hoped it would end up with a Mueller-like prosecutor to investigate this. That's what he wanted to do as he got out the door, and he got it. He got what he wanted, and this column was an impetus. But what did they put in that column that might have been classified?
Yeah, I don't think that's – what I think happened is Comey asked Richmond to pass on to a reporter at the New York Times, Comey's meeting with Trump about General Flynn. And Comey was hoping that that would trigger the appointment of a special counsel on the theory that Trump had obstructed the Flynn investigation. That's the story he was trying to get out. The problem in terms of the way the indictment is structured with including that is that happened in May 2017. At that point, Comey is no longer the FBI director. Richmond doesn't work for the FBI anymore. His contract ended like 3 or 4 months before that. So Comey was not factually in a position to authorize Richmond to do anything. And again, that incident, which is a reprehensible incident, and I think Comey was rightly condemned by the inspector general in the report about that incident. He had no business leaking those reports, and it doesn't matter. Well, it matters a little, but the fact that he didn't think he was leaking or that those reports contained any classified information, and then somebody retroactively decided that there were a couple of pieces of information, he should not have been leaking his own reports. Yeah. That's like, you can't do that.
So is that indictable?
If he had leaked classified information, it would have been indictable. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to win the case, right? Because in a leaking classified information case, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person willfully leaked classified information. The assessment the Justice Department made in the first Trump administration about this is that Comey had tried not to include classified information in his reports about his conversations with Trump, and that the FBI looked at it afterwards and found in the five, I think, reports there were two instances of low-level classified information that shouldn't have been in the reports. But that's not the part of the reports that Richmond gave to the New York Times. That was unclassified. And in any event, it wasn't a classified leak information. There's like two different things going on. One is leaking classified information, which is a crime. The other thing is leaking FBI investigative information. And that's not a crime, even though it's a firing offense if you get caught doing it. There's, you know, various administrative discipline that they can impose on you.
So the chances of your friend, Patrick Fitzgerald, who we know he's been all over this, the legal profession in government for a while, he's going to represent Comey. And it looks like the prosecutors, the government wants him off the case. Do you think they have a case?
You know, it doesn't look like the judge is sensitive or is sympathetic to this. I should say, since you said it, Brian, Pat Fitzgerald was my partner in the Blind Shake prosecution back in the 1990s. I wish old friends of mine would stop getting involved in cases, but, you know, there you have it. But as far as this, and I should also say, I have not talked to Fitzgerald about this case. I have no idea. Nothing I'm saying is based on anything I'm being told by those guys. I'm not being told anything by them, nor am I asking. But the judge didn't seem sympathetic. The argument is that Comey may have used Fitzgerald to leak classified information. What the defense is saying is that this was looked at by both Durham and the inspector general, and no one has accused Comey of leaking classified information. He consulted Fitzgerald because Fitzgerald was his lawyer at the time. And you can ask whether Fitzgerald had the clearance to have that kind of a consultation. But there's no allegation that they actually leaked. And Fitzgerald, my understanding is, gave Comey's reports voluntarily to the FBI. He didn't make them like get a search warrant or any of that stuff.
So he looks like he might stick on the case, and we'll see what the prosecutor comes up with, because they probably need somebody a little bit more experienced if they're going to do this. All right, so we'll see where this goes. Of course, James Comey wants it dismissed before it goes to trial. Andy, thanks so much. You're not only a great legal mind, but a great writer. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. The
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Say Stompy with the sprinkler. I don't think I'll do that.
I really didn't. I'm just really disappointed. I just heard some of the things. I've tried to block it out. Yeah. You know. Well, I don't know. I don't know, man.
I guess, like, everybody out there. I know. I heard some of the things that she said. And don't like. I know, Tommy. You're just trying to get me going here. And I think more than anything, I just is like, wow, like. I don't, it's too easy to like just to fall back on that, the Truman quote. What I don't even know whether he said it or not. If you want a dog in Washington, in D.C., get a dog. I mean, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog.
So Hunter Biden went on to say in an interview that he wouldn't have accepted the pardon. He wouldn't have gotten a pardon from his dad if Donald Trump didn't win the election, and he thought he was intent on retribution. He also said, I'm a person of privilege because my dad was the president. And it seems like he always makes himself the victim. I wish him the best, but he said he would have beaten that prosecution. On the tax, not paying your taxes, forget the gun charge. On the taxes, I don't know anyone who just doesn't pay millions of dollars of taxes and gets away with it. Do you? Brian Kilmeade Show.